The tarot cards are the most complex, simple game in the world because each of the 78 cards has an incredible number of meanings. It has, they have traditional meanings, and then they have meanings that have been developed as the cards have been related to various forms of esoteric lore in the Neoplatonic and the Kabbalistic, and even the Sufi and American Indian traditions. The tarot has no end of possibilities in terms of what it means. You can see her cards that we may be discussing through the thing if you go to www.mary, M-A-R-Y, hyphen, E-L, dot com. That's Mary hyphen L dot com. And you can see her cards on the as you're listening. If you are listening to us as a if you're listening to us as a web streaming, which is probably the best way to get this show anyway, then what you do is just open a separate folder, and you can get that and still be listening to us at the same time. So it's maryl.com. And that'll take you to the cards that she's completed, as well as her bio and other things. If you want to call, feel free to call in. The station here, telephone number is 919-929-9601. And again, this is Touchstones. This is WCOM 103.5. FM in Carrboro, Chapel Hill. And now let me introduce my friend Marie White. Marie, thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
Tell us about your how did you discover tarot?
When I was a young teenager, I got these Time Life books.
Okay. Now, where did you grow up?
Just outside Los Angeles, suburb of Los Angeles, California.
Yeah, one of those that just got wiped out with the fire recently.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. So you grew up there.
Mm-hmm.
And you found a Time Life book that had some tarot card images in it, huh?
Yeah, that's the first time I ever remember seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always into cards, and my grandfather always had these different cards with, like, Outer Limits monsters on them, things like that, and I just thought they were great. And I was always playing solitaire and just different stuff like that. It always really interested me. Plus, I just loved art and everything, so... But yeah, the first time I remember actually seeing tarot was in the Time Life book, and then I started looking for them. But they weren't widely available back then, so it took a couple years before I actually got my hands on a deck.
Yeah. Now you also have an artistic vein, so you must mm-hmm. have already been drawing by then. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, always.
Always, you've been drawing since you were able to pick up a pencil or
right.
whatever it
yeah,
was,
before,
or a crayon.
Before I can
huh?
remember, yeah. It's just always been that way.
Yeah, so did you have any professional training at all or did you take any serious classes in terms of art?
Some. When I was about 20, after high school, I went to just the community college and took a bunch of painting classes and art classes. So I never went for the actual degree because I didn't think it would get me much anyway, so I just took painting classes, and that's really about it.
Yeah.
All through regular school, they just pretty much booted me out because I couldn't follow directions artistically, you know, so I never went to any art classes in high school or junior high and basically survived that.
I'll be honest with you, I'm lucky to draw anything at all. I can hardly make a line, much less draw anything. But, yeah, when I was in high school, I was in that adolescent rebellion phase mm-hmm. where I just drew what I was going to draw. And I think I had the finest compliment I had is all my pictures were stolen.
Hey, there you go.
You know? so somebody didn't like them enough to take them away. You know, and of course they were all, you know, semi-erotic, weird, you know, fantasies and stuff. Yeah. But after all, you know, adolescence, as some of us may well remember, is a time of raging hormones and uncertain direction. Mm-hmm. Though, to be honest, you know, a lot of us find ourselves in direction. One of the people I was going to talk about today is not related to tarot, but he wrote a testament to his finding his own self by doing a world tour, and eventually he became this well-known scholar who has completely imagined the meaning of James, who was the brother of Jesus. Hmm. And lived, and it was the first patriarch of Jerusalem, and led the, basically the Jewish faction of the Christian religion. And there's been enough archaeological work done, specifically with the Dead Sea Scrolls and some other things, that it's pretty, you can get a pretty good idea of who James was. Also, there's a book that James wrote in the New Testament. Luther hated this book and thought it was should never have been included, but in the New Testament. And the reason why is that it was purely, as he thought of it, as an ethical treatise. So Robert Eisenman was, as it were, an anti-beatnik back in the late 50s, and he wrote a testament on, it's called the Jerusalem Testament, and it was recently published by North Atlantic. And if you're interested in the beginnings of a scholar's writings as they relate to personality formation and ultimately to the call of his own career, which is quite impressive with his work about James that came out about 10 years ago, that would be one to look up. Let's go back to discussing tarot, and then we're going to discuss your creative process with tarot, and we'll talk a little bit about the symbols, and we'll talk about how you come to some of your images, which are, I have to say that your tarot has some relationship probably to do with the Rider-Waite deck, which is the classic English deck, of American deck that's done it, but in a lot of ways it also is very, very different.
Yeah,
and you've really moved away from that. Mm-hmm. And but let us talk a little bit about what the basic tarot decks are. I'll use this just as an introduction. If you don't know what tarot decks are, they're basically the playing cards you see, in which hearts equal cups, spades equals earth. Tell me if I'm wrong here.
Spades or swords?
Spades or swords? Okay.
Cups would be wands, and diamonds would be.
Diamonds?
Pentacles, coins.
Or coins.
Depending on what deck.
Which is earth.
Yeah.
Okay. So as you see, even I don't remember the correspondences very well. But and then there's three basic traditions of tarot. There's one that's relatively old, and it's the Marseille tradition. And the earliest of the Marseille decks goes back to 1650. But most of the Marseille decks that we have go back to about 1750. The earliest one is called the Noblet one. And I thought it was quite interesting because I looked at a copy of this just recently. They had a reproduction of it done. And I noticed that in the Fool, you know, normally the Fool is walking off a cliff and has the animal, the cat or the dog at one's heels, that's on his heels, that's sort of scampering along or possibly biting, mm-hmm. biting him. Well, in this one, in the Noblet, the Fool's genitals are extremely well exposed, and the cat is going for them. Now, the next interesting image in this one is that's the Fool is an unnumbered card. It's basically, you know, numbered zero. It doesn't have a number of the numbers in the major arcana. And the next one is the Magician. And the Magician is, instead of holding up a wand, is holding up a severed, that's right, penis.
Same, symbolically, same thing.
Yeah, right. Symbolically, the same thing. But unfortunately, and considering that most taros are relatively milquetoast as far as sexual explicitness goes, this is kind of interesting that the earliest known image of the Marseille is quite explicit on this.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you heard, there was somebody in, where was it? Arizona, Grand Canyon. Somebody who worked over there who got the plague recently and died. Did you read that in the news?
Yeah.
And so I was looking it up. I'm always, I don't know why, but I'm really interested in that kind of stuff. And just the art, the whole thing that grew up out of that, the whole way society was just really morbid and into all this stuff dealing with death and what was going to happen afterwards and why people are chosen and why everybody's taken and all that was really the kind of environment that tarot grew up out of.
Yeah.
So I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, there was just so many people suffering and dying. They were moving beyond just the pretty surface of life at that time.
Yeah. And they also were more ritually involved.
Yeah.
Like one of the origins of the tarot, major arcana. The minor arcana are similar to our playing cards, as we started to say, and then you have the court cards, and in tarot you have an extra court card, so you have basically a page and knight and queen and
king.
Yeah. And that's the usual way that these are. Sometimes it's prince and princess, are the two minor, and then king and queen. But the interesting thing is, and then you have the major arcana, which we were talking about, which are 22 cards that have this symbolism. And one of the theories of the origin of the tarot is that the symbolism of these, they represented sort of like floats in a parade.
The Danse Macabre.
Yeah, the Danse Macabre, you know, the day that the day of the fool, when everything is reversed and the fool becomes the king for a day, and everything. Of course, what usually happened in these classic pageants and these triumphs, as they were called, we would have a you know, the king would, the fool was killed afterwards, and I think in some Alexander Dumas novels or something, this is the treachery of this.
Was reading one of those.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. So, all right, so that's a little bit of the background of what tarot is, and what it would be nice to talk about now would be. And we talked a little bit about how you got into it as a teenager. Mm-hmm. So when did you start your Mary L. deck, how did you name it that?
Well, I started it, it's been almost 10 years now. Maybe it has been almost 10 years now, when my first daughter was a baby and I was nursing and you get to where you can't get up and walk around or do anything. You're just, you know, stuck. So I was just passing time pretty much like, I think I'll draw a tarot deck.
Yeah.
Just kind of offhandedly, didn't think it was, you know, that big a deal or anything. And then, you know, it's really fun to think, you could do this and that and change this name and that name. And before I knew it, I was just really deeply into it, you know. And as time went on, it just really turned into like my life's work kind of a thing. Marielle, the name for it, what it meant to me was originally what I planned on it being was Mary as the origin of my name, Marie.
Right.
And L being a name for God. So it would be a combination of, you know, both myself and being divinely inspired.
In the Old Testament, you'd have Bethel,
right.
Azrael, which are names for angels.
Right. And to put L on the end of something is to give it like possession of
The
God.
Divine. Yeah.
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 And so that's pretty much why.
So from now on, I'm going to be known as Paul L.
Paul L.
Yeah.
But I always planned on trying to get some kind of balance. That was the main thing I was going for at the very start. All the way through, it has been trying to balance it between, you know, male and female. And which to me at the time seemed to be lacking. Of course, there's like been a gazillion decks that have come out since then, and I've learned a lot more too, and I don't even know if my perceptions match what they are now. I think they are a little bit more balanced than I thought at the time, but at the time I perceived a real imbalance between decks with a good male and female energy in them.
What was the first card that came to you when you started this process?
The Emperor.
The Emperor, that's mm-hmm. number four mm-hmm. in the Major Arcana. And you can see it again on the website. If you have it there, I'm going to tune in myself here and pull it up. So now this emperor is very different. Normally the emperor sits on a throne, and I was looking at things. And this guy, actually, I was just talking to somebody like that over in the cafe. yes, but the, I mean, looked just like, we didn't, thank goodness he wasn't carrying a sword at the time, nor was he encrusted with dragonflies. Those look mm-hmm. like dragonflies mm-hmm. to me. So tell me about the emperor.
Well, I always kind of thought he was like the patron of this deck, that card. I can't even remember what actually, you know, possessed me even to do it. But I know once I had him done, I thought, wow, you know, this is maybe something I can do. And he became like the measure I used for cards thereafter.
Yeah. And of course, in a purely symbolic sense, beyond mm-hmm. what the emperor means, he's the wise old man.
Yeah.
And so, in some ways, mm-hmm. for a young woman who's nursing her first child, he represents a guide to yeah. To the unconscious and into
like
the life things
kind of a thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And animus is the term for the unconscious image of the soul in a woman. Anima is the unconscious image of the soul in a man, following loosely in Jungian terminology. Mm-hmm. So do you have anything, for instance, he's got this interesting tattoo on his on the back of his hand there.
I think that was a modified pentagram.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I wanted him to be, to have different things that showed the different elements.
Right.
Since he was four. So different earth
so,
elements.
So you have the earth element, and you have the sword element, which in your right. system is that air?
Air.
It's air.
And then the dragonfly would be fire.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to pull out the card here.
And then is there anything that's explicitly water in that?
The fish on the sword.
The fish on the sword. Okay, that's really interesting. We have the fish on the sword. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the so you have this, and you can sort of see that he's leading with the sword. So in some ways, this is sort of showing one of the ways that it may be that you've even been approaching this whole deck, because he's holding the sword up, and the sword is a blend of air and water. And it's cutting through or moving towards something.
Mm-hmm.
And so air and water, which is feeling and thought. And there's an interesting blend. And I think, if anything, your own process, which seems to have a lot to do with your own dreams
mm-hmm.
and what occurs to you, what comes up out of your own experience, rather than, you know, what the what some grand design, some technical.
Right.
You know, you didn't, like, plot the whole thing out, yeah. which is the way a number of Tauros do.
I tried to at first, and then I quickly realized that, you know.
It wasn't your working. Process?
Right. And I actually went through a whole thing somewhere in the middle where I thought, you know what, I am in control of my own destiny,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, this is going to be whatever I want it to be. But, no, it's not.
It just didn't seem to work for you that way.
Well, you know, it works. You can make a plan and do a tarot deck, and you can do a theme, and you can do whatever.
Which is, by the way most tarot decks get created like that.
A lot.
Yeah.
But to me, that's only... It's shallow. Not saying that anybody's decks are shallow, but from what I could do, it's kind of like something on the surface where I wanted something, you know, below my consciousness.
We've got a phone call here. Let's take it and see who it is. Hi there. Hi there. You're going to be on the air here in just a second. And do you want to talk? Do you have a question? Hello? You're on the air. Do you want to talk? Apparently they don't. So we will go back. All right, that's my first attempt to try to actually get somebody to talk to us on the air. So give me a chance, folks. It takes a while for me to figure out how to use the phones here. All right, so let's go back to what you were saying about your so, process.
Anyway, I didn't want it to be anything that comes from my own design is shallow compared to
what emerges.
Yeah, what there's potentially out there, and that's more what I've tried to go for.
And that may be one of the reasons why it's taken you so long that you've been working so long on the deck, because it takes time. You can't rush the unconscious. Yeah. I mean, we can, consciously we can, egotistically we can be in control. I'm in control. I can design this. I can do whatever I want. That's our nice, healthy, happy, constructed self, which works in illusory stuff. But if you're trying to address the whole mind and the potential of the psyche and the destiny of your soul, then unfortunately, folks, there's a lot more, as it were, underneath and unseen than there is that we think we have control over. Control is a kind of healthy, unhealthy illusion.
Yeah.
It both works. It both serves us in our day-to-day life, and it also sort of, causes us to sort of fall apart. it's, I guess, one of the great lessons in life is to learn how to allow you to recognize that your ego is something that doesn't just need to be filled up, it also needs to be emptied. Mm-hmm. And so we have this process, a sort of ebb and flow process of, filling ourselves up with I'm in control and letting go I'm not in control, which is emptying ourselves. And so in your process, you are seeking, as it were, the deeper waters of this tarot experience.
Exactly.
So tell me more about how deep those waters go.
It's tarot. I would say it's just the human experience, I guess, expressed through tarot.
Yeah.
Archetypes and the symbols, and then I'm putting them on cards.
So now, what was the one that you most recently did? It was a minor arcana card. What was it?
The last card I've done was the Seven of Wands.
The Seven of Wands, mm-hmm. which, if I remember, is a wolf, right?
Right, white wolf.
The big white wolf looking mm-hmm. right at us. And I think it's on the, you can look it up, people, on the website if you want. And if you haven't tuned in, the website where you can see these tarot images is Mary-L, that's Mary-EL.com. And you can see the images that we're just talking about today from at that place. So do you want to discuss, since that was the most recent card, what your process was for that? What came to you? And again, what was it? It was the wolf, and it was, what was the minor arcana? It was
the Seven of Wands.
The Seven of Wands. Mm-hmm.
So pretty much what I do now is I try to just look at the basics and get down to the basics. So with the minors, it's a number.
Right.
And an element.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. That's where I start. And the numbers, it occurred to me at some point a long time ago that, hey, the numerology is already spelled out in the major arcana.
Right.
So sevens would be the chariot. And, and then you study it, and, of course, it works out.
And so five is the
Hierophant.
The Hierophant, mm-hmm. or the Pope, depending mm-hmm. on how you're looking at it.
Yeah.
And so the wolf, the wands, and wands also usually means fire.
Right.
And
so the chariot in my deck is a woman with four wolves. So the chariot's being drawn by wolves.
Right.
So that's why I picked the wolves for, I'm going to do it on at least two cards, a white wolf and a black wolf. And those are also going to represent the white horse and the black horse from the Plato theory of the soul.
Right. Yeah. Which is, you know, one is, you know, trying to go ascend heaven and the other one's trying to descend.
Right. And you have to control them both.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with reason and you'll reach enlightenment like that.
Yeah. Or
you'll crash and burn.
Yeah. Whatever. Right.
Yeah. Depending on who gets on top there.
Yeah. Who wins? You know, how if you go too high, you melt. And if you go too low, you freeze. Yeah. You know? Fire and ice.
Yeah.
So what would your divination in this particular case is if someone were to draw this card, starting to read from your deck, mm-hmm. and they pulled up this five of wands, the seven of wands.
It would probably be.
And they're looking at this big white wolf looking
right.
at them.
Maybe someone who is idealistic,
mm-hmm.
Who needed to find some, to understand that that wasn't the only, you know, even though it was really good and maybe a very, it's hard to put into words, a really good way to do things, you still need to balance it out and not forget the dark side as well, and balance that and get it all together.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost, when you read about it, the white wolf, the valiant aspect, seems like it would be the way to go, but it isn't the highest. Reason is the highest and it needs to balance. So it would be something along those lines. I don't know. Things when you actually do a reading come up differently.
Yeah, they come up in combinations, mm-hmm. and sometimes the combinations change how you would read the mm-hmm. symbol of the cards.
Yeah.
You know, a modern tarot reading is a very interesting process, because the normal way that people try to get people to read the tarot initially is just to look at the images at the deck that you've chosen. And allow your unconscious to flow and mm-hmm. to say, what does this mean to you? And then when you read the cards for someone else, you have your associations of what the cards cause you to feel. Like if I saw a wolf, this white wolf, I would also think of wildness.
Mm-hmm.
I would think of my own wildness, mm-hmm. for instance. And I think, you know, I would think, well, maybe I'm carried away with my own ideas,
yeah.
you know, so they're not quite... And like, or maybe I'm denial. Maybe there's a sense of threat here that I'm in denial about what the thing is.
Yeah, one of the other things too, I was thinking with the wolves were the companions of Odin.
Uh huh.
He had the two wolves and the two ravens, and one was fierceness, and the wolves. One was fierceness, and one is ravenous or gluttony, gluttonous.
Yeah, I guess.
And so
he
would be fierceness.
When you get an opportunity, you're going to have to see that new version of Grendel, huh? of Beowulf.
Beowulf. I'm not really interested.
not interested.
I'd rather read it. Yeah.
Yes, it's definitely not the same thing as reading it. You know, that's true. But what's her name? Jolie.
Angelina Jolie
is mm-hmm. As the monster's yeah. mother of Grendel is kind of interesting in itself, but not too based on the book, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Not too based on the book.
But I'm like way into Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
You know, if I was going to do movies, I would say Odin would be totally Gandalf.
This is interesting.
Totally.
So you see Odin more as, instead of just being the, because he's also, you know, I see like classically the hanged man, you know.
You can put him in a couple cards.
Yeah.
I could put him in the emperor.
Yeah,
here.
That's
or
true.
The magician.
Right.
The hanged man.
Now Odin is the father of Thor, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the interesting things about modern tarot is that we have, as it were, taken an incredible hodgepodge of heavens, you know. And I often think that one of my favorite jokes is that when you die and you go up to heaven and you're thinking you're going to see St. Peter, and suddenly you see, Thor coming up to you and saying, well, I hate to tell you, but this is the only heaven there is.
Mm-hmm.
Valhalla. Well, I didn't know that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't lived my life heroically enough to get in. So, but the... But yeah, who knows what will happen in the long run.
But one of the things that the wolves did for Odin was they ate and did all the worldly things for him because, you know, he was a god. He didn't eat.
Right.
So that's kind of how I see the sevens is like, you know, the chariot being the body that's carrying the divine soul. And that's why the eyes are green on the wolf, because it's the divine soul inside, you know, the body, wild, beastly body.
Yeah, so in this particular case, but also in the classically with the chariot, part of it is to deals with a decisiveness. But you know, if you have choice with the lovers, you have made a decision,
right?
You know, with the chariot. And interestingly enough,
leadership, community.
And also the, of course, they can also mean war classically, as the chariot was the tank of its time,
right.
Until the Greeks figured out a way to outflank them.
I read that was pretty, that's pretty interesting how they did
flanks,
that.
Yeah, they outflanks them, actually, I guess is the right word. So okay, so let's. You want to take another card and talk about your process? Got any card? Any card? Grab a card. Just grab a card at the.
Gosh, I don't know. One of the longest running things I had was with the fives, and I just finished those, which started with the, you know, the Hierophant, and then I ended up going back and reworking on, even though I'd finished it years before, and then I did all the fives, and that one really. More than anything else, was just like a long series of connected dreams and circumstance that ended up, you know, tying it all together. And that's the one that really convinced me, you know, this is what I was meant to do. This is how things are meant to work out.
It's very interesting. You know, the fives, from the minor arcana point of view, also represents the farthest descent.
Right.
It's the full arc into matter or into unconsciousness. You know, often when you get fives in readings, it usually means you're being challenged or are seriously challenged at that point. And that's pretty much the traditional readings for fives in tarot. And then in the arc of descent, then of course then you begin to have an ascent beginning with six and seven and eight, and usually going to completion in nine and a re-beginning in ten. But the you know, so it's interesting that you that was where, you know, in some ways you felt stalled out, because in some ways you were, you know, you were hitting bottom.
Literally. It was definitely the most intense.
Yeah.
And long running, and I mean, I'm really happy with them. They're you know, they're different. They're really different. They're different than the traditional, for sure.
Okay, you can you can call them up on your on your screen here, and let's see.
Now, these are, none of my cards are Rider-Waite based, or you know, anything else. But I study all of that, so I'll study the Rider-Waite and the Crowley deck and the Marseille, and you know, I want to know what other people have come up with. What, because I think it's all based on the same thing,
right?
It's all, you know, growing out of the same archetypes, and so it's. It's the archetypes that I'm trying to be inspired by rather than any other deck.
And here it seems like you really quite are. Like, let's look at the, I guess this one here that I'm looking at, the one that has the fire in it, is fire. Is that correct?
Five of Wands?
Yeah.
The lion?
Yeah. Okay, so that's a lion rushing. Obviously, it looks like he's in full gallop there. Is that right? So what? So give us a little, and there's obviously a dark, shadowy tree behind him. So it's a lion coming out of a forest. So what's your take on this?
This whole thing all came out of a dream I was having.
Okay.
I don't remember if I had it when I was painting the Hierophant or what, but I was working on the Hierophant, and I was trying to get there's these stained glass. Well, I had redone it. I had done a new one, and then I, you know, after a while, it just didn't do anything for me anymore, and I kept feeling like it's just wrong, and I can't do the fives until I get the Hierophant right. And there's these stained glass windows in the old one. I finally thought, well, you know, I'll just, there's some stuff I really love about the old one. There's some stuff I don't care so much about. So I'll just repaint it and, you know, change the few things. And what I wanted to do was put the symbols of the four elements in the stained glass window behind the Hierophant.
Okay.
And I was going to do the four cherubim
Right.
Or, you know, the apostles have been symbolized like that with the right. lion and the eagle and the bull and the angel.
Yeah, yeah, from the vision of Ezekiel. Yeah,
yeah so, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was working on that and working on that, and it never quite worked right. It was taking over the image rather mm-hmm. than being behind the Hierophant.
Right.
And so one night I had this really long, involved dream. Do you want to hear it?
Yes, I do want to hear it.
What happened was I was walking through this city that had these giant iron gates, and there was one end of the city was like slums, and there was clothes hanging and rags hanging all over the gate, and the middle was like a I guess it was residential, and then on the other side in front of this other it wasn't even iron, it was like some kind of bronze or copper or something, a giant gate. In front of that, it was more like merchants. And there was people walking around and coming back and forth. And outside of this was this huge desert. And there was a road that came and then went off at a right angle. And I came out of there and I was following this road. I'm giving kind of a brief description.
Right.
And there was a big church. And I went into the church and I went into the back. And in this little antechamber, I found all these tarot cards stuck all over the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, these are crap. And so I started ripping them down and throwing them in the trash.
Right.
And there was four there that were perfect. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, these are just perfect. And so I had it out with like this priest that came back and told me, you know, I shouldn't be there and a bunch of stuff like that. But these cards had on them, I didn't know what they were. They were like it looked like an abstract design, and they were in like rusts and oranges. Mm-hmm. And when I got up, I sketched them out, and I quickly realized that they were the Hebrew letters for Yod Hey Vav Hey.
Right,
which is the name of God, the Tetragrammaton, four letter name of God,
which also is a structure for the minor arcana.
Right. Yeah. And so, what I did after that is instead of painting the cherubim, I just really subtly put those into the stained glass window.
The yod and the he, right.
Right. And then these, since the mm-hmm. fives are based on the Hierophant, are right. what I picture to be the, you know, however you would humanize it, anthropomorphize it or whatever, of mm-hmm. those letters. So the flaming lion is the yod.
Right.
And then he was
the
woman with the owls.
Right.
And then, oh wait, no, that's not what it was. Hey was the unicorn.
The unicorn.
Bob was the woman with the owls, and then the final Hey was the Adam. And it was, and I had.
And you can see Adam has the disc at right. his heart, which uh-huh. is, you know, sort of like the Garden of Eden in a way.
Mm-hmm. And I had all these. And he's of
definitely
dreams
a series. He's a serious Rastafarian.
Yeah.
He's got dread. Dreadlocks,
you know, those are all
to,
snakes. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, those are, yeah, those are dreadlocks to be envied. Yeah, well, actually, I mean, the classic symbolism for dreadlocks in Sri Lanka. I read a book years ago about people who had dreadlocks in Sri Lanka, and it's always considered
snakes,
the
really?
Snakes. Yeah, it's
my hair would totally want to do that if I would.
Yeah.
Let it.
Oh yeah, you would be a great Rastafarian.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the. They get a little wild. Eventually, they cake up and they break off, and mm-hmm. you know, people then carry them around with them in a bundle. But be that as it may, I'm not a dreadlock kind of person myself. I'm lucky I can grow a beard. I know this is a little off topic, but I love being off topic in a way. Is that you told a dream, I thought it would be real interesting to tell you my dream that I had last night.
Hmm.
And it was an unusual dream in the sense that, I had a lot of archetypal images with mm-hmm. it. And so, and in some of what I thought, gee, this is strange. You know, I obviously was anticipating our conversation mm-hmm. here today. And I want to have you back, and we can talk more about it sometime, probably sometime after the first of the year.
Okay.
And we'll continue to explore not only your deck, but your artistic process. Because even though, an hour may seem like a long time, we're just scratching the surface here, and there's a lot more to say. And to what I can remember, this dream that I had last night, it starts out where I'm sort of lost, and I'm walking around, and I find this, you get this discovery. Oh, yeah, I know what it is. What it is we have found that there is a entranceway that you could see. If you reflect a light onto this wall, you would see that there was this light would reflect back at a certain place, and people could walk through this. Not all people would see the light, mm-hmm. but the people who could see the light could walk through this image mm-hmm. and go into another world. But it was only a few people who could do this. There were a lot of people who suddenly discovered that they were of two worlds. They mm-hmm. were of this other dimensional world, and they were of our world. So, you know, and I had discovered, as it were, the light source that allowed this transition for people to do. Otherwise, if the light isn't there, people don't know they can transition between the two worlds, and they're stuck in them. So I go to the other world, and there I meet this incredible energetic force that just is wild and powerful. And when I come back to this world, he's with me. It's a more of an energy than a he or a she, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, and I've got, and but it's really bugging me because it wants to do something. It wants to do something. So the rest of my dream, or dreams, I should say, is instructing this incredible, powerful libido. And I mean libido here in the Jungian sense more mm-hmm. than the Freudian sense of sexual energy. Right. But, you know, and so the first thing I said was, well, look, this person's house is all, you know, needs to be repainted. So maybe what you could do is you could, you know, scrape all the paint off and add new paint to it. And so I start coming up with little simple tasks. But then I notice that all the little simple tasks that I'm giving this powerful thing to do was creating problems. You know, as I went through and, you know, sort of tidied up the city and cleaned up cleaned up all the structures of the city and the town that I was living in, people were getting a little pissed off because they suddenly didn't have things to do anymore. Mm-hmm. And then I would go in and I would try to fix them and make them so that they were happy with themselves. And I found that the more that I meddled with them using this incredible force, the more problems I was creating. I was creating mm-hmm. people who were apathetic, people who were angry, people. And this is an extremism. So then I finally decided that what I was actually doing is I was trying to teach this force how to be responsible. So eventually I start teaching it to be, instead of needing to do something in this incredible, wild, inchoate way, I suddenly saw that what it really needed to do was to learn how to be patient and how to listen and how to, if it does meddle, to meddle in a gentle way so that people would still go through their own process and still do their own thing. And people whose job it was to keep, you know, to paint the building would have the building painted, wouldn't find themselves out of work because of some strange demon that cleaned up everything, you know. Suddenly all the masons don't have any masonry to do. All the ditch diggers have got no ditches to dig anymore, you know. And suddenly you're out of work and you're miserable and you're making your life miserable for other people. So in other words, it's sort of like we have to find that place, you know, yeah. that symbolic place where we're even and happy. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what, you know. And I thought to myself, and so the dream is an endless series of me trying to reteach my demon how to be, you know, subtle. And I noticed that what it did, the more I did this, the more personality it had. Mm-hmm. And it began to be able to even make its own decisions, and it didn't need me to direct it anymore. And I was quite happy about that because it was actually somewhat of a drag to have hanging around. I was saying, I've got to do something right now, and you got to show me how to do it. So, and I was really happy that it relaxed down. I thought, well, how does that relate to this Tarot show that's coming up here? And I thought, you know, well, probably what it means is, you know, that you just sort of, you know, that the thing you learn with this unconscious thing is that it has its own wisdom. Mm-hmm. We have to sort of recognize what it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the five, you know, here is you have this emerging wisdom, but you also have, there's also a profoundly, in the Five of Swords, the Five of Discs, the Five of Cups, there is, as it were, in them, a very interesting image of What do I want to say? Well, the word that comes to me is virginal, but I probably mean that in the sense of a primordial hope.
Yeah.
You know, there's an incredible, you know, it's sort of like in the area of our darkest longings is also our greatest things. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it really comes through in a lot of ways. I mean, the white owls in the Five of Swords, with surrounding the, is that, I don't know if that's two people. I need better glasses on this thing. But the
it's one woman with a baby.
Uh huh. Okay. And actually, you have as would make sense in a way, considering you've had a couple of other kids.
Yeah.
I also need to plug. I have to plug Marie's oldest child, Sophie.
Yeah.
And her wonderful tarot deck called Sophie's Tarot, which is that she did when she was about four. Mm-hmm. And
she really wanted to come. When I told her I was coming here, she's like, "Oh, let me go."
Yeah, yeah.
I want to be on the radio.
Well, I think it'll be great. And one of these days, when I'm more technically savvy, we'll have it so we can do a remote show, and we will have her on the
All
radio.
Right. She'll love that.
But probably in those days I'll be doing I'll do shows at other times and actually just broadcast them here. But yeah, so it's really one of the great naive but also wonderful child-appropriate decks that was done. It's mm-hmm. it's a wonderful deck. It's basically stick figures, black and white, pencil.
Yeah.
But, you know, wonderful. And she did all 78 cards, too,
yeah.
by the way. And they are at least technically available if you ordered them through Marielle, though. I don't know. I keep telling people to order them, but I think you'd have to actually produce some more,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, how many more cards do you have to do yet before
11,
you're
11? I think
11.
Mm-hmm.
Got 11 more to do, and then
pretty close.
So in about 5 years, folks, we.
I'm trying to get them done by, this time next year. I should be done.
Okay, you're pushing. She's pushing her unconscious, folks. So
yeah.
we'll see if her unconscious allows her to do this, or her kids, for that matter.
Yeah.
And the moving towards this completion of this deck, it's actually a much anticipated deck because a lot of people are looking forward to. What happens is in the community, tarot community, you have readers, and readers are people who use the different tarot decks that are created. And there are a lot of decks that people just have, and they never seriously read from them because, you know, they just don't resonate. And then there are other decks that people pick up immediately and find them very simpatico. A lot of tarotists feel that this is going to be one of those real interesting decks that's going to provide a unique reading for them, and they're really looking forward to that. It's difficult to it's hard. You can't read a deck that's only published on the internet at this point.
Well, I got this one now.
Yeah, you got this one.
Actually, what I did, since I'm so close, is I made it, and then I just did some pips.
Oh, you did the
for
pips
the missing cards.
Oh yeah.
And so I can actually use it now.
Uh huh.
Just recently.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and
that's great.
So I've been using it, and it's really, really interesting after working on something for so long to finally
to be able to
start to use it. Because it's gotten to where I can't use other decks,
mm-hmm.
because as soon as I lay out anything, all I think about is mine.
Right, right.
And, you know, that gets confusing for people. So,
yeah.
It's been really interesting, and they come out. I mean, I have all these highfalutin ideas about what everything means, but when you do a reading, it's...
It comes out in various. It's sort of what it does is it's a wash. One of the interesting things about tarot readings, folks, is the cards are always right.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the strange thing is that although there's endless variations on the tarot, and there are people who have very different takes on even the traditional meaning, so that you don't even really have a consensus there. You still do have this incredible. Way of when you start reading the tarot, it brings up things that are very interesting, and it usually tells people things about themselves that they may not have been wanting to say to themselves
right.
consciously. And it's a very interesting, I mean, it's sort of like it's going to tell you the truth about where you're at,
mm-hmm.
whether you want to hear it or not. And of course, that's the truth also with the reader, is the reader is going to read it to you with this. And, you know, some readers are more bald than other readers in terms of how they say things straight out. But eventually what happens is you get teased into seeing aspects, and you're sort of saying, why does a deck of cards with these strange and almost arbitrary symbol systems evoke this?
Yeah, I think it's the language of the subconscious.
It's the symbolism.
Your subconscious understands it. And I think if you were speaking plain English, all you'd be talking to is your consciousness. But since it's not speaking plain English, it's able to get under that and talk to... I mean, so if you made one that was very literal, that's all it would evoke in a reading.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get beyond that into, you know, what you would find in dreams, dream symbolism and mythological symbolism, you know, the symbolism of humanity, then...
And there's, you see, and the thing is that symbolism is actually the natural language of the unconscious.
Yeah.
And therefore... Even though, you know, there's been selection made and formalization made about the symbolism and what it might mean or may not mean, the symbols themselves are multivalent. In other words, they have many meanings.
Yeah.
And the meanings are transformed. You can't pin them down. They have so many meanings that they vary a great deal. But this is actually the language of the unconscious.
Yeah, and I really feel they're built into us.
Yeah.
I feel that everybody... can understand this.
Yeah, and actually, well, our own language, by the way, is also symbolical primarily. Mm-hmm. You know, metaphor is the way we create meaning. And metaphor is starts with the analogical process of this means that, mm-hmm. that means this. But in a situation to where this means that and that and that, and this, you know, and that means this and this and this, so that there's a variety of possibilities there. Now, in our conscious thought and development of language, we have attempted to create a less multivariant meaning, so mm-hmm. that this means this and that there's no that to this at all, right? And we attempt to do that, and we have done that with a good part of our language. But at the same time, the natural language, which is always symbolical and metaphorical. Mm-hmm. And metaphor, you know, like metaphorical rocks represent rocks that have, you know, mixed and mingled and changed.
Mm-hmm.
And language does the same thing, naturally mixes, mingles, and changes because it's all this thing. So what we're really talking about here is that we're going into this language of the unconscious. And the tarot is an amazing phenomenon in America today because, you know, it's a commodity. It's something you can buy. There are many, many versions of the tarot. There are some people who only buy tarots because they like the art on them.
Mm-hmm.
They are an art form, a sort of popular art form, which has a tremendous variety of uses. And for all over the world, there are Chinese tarots, there are Japanese traditions of tarot, there are manga traditions of tarot, there are, you know, many artists do tarots, even advertisers do tarots. Mm-hmm. You know, there was one for Toyota or for some car thing recently.
Volkswagen. Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. The EOS, that was it.
Yeah.
The EOS tarot was recently done. And though, and there's, you know... the thing is that this is, as it were, one of the ways that popular religion works in our society, in our time.
Mm-hmm.
And on that point, I think that I would like to return to talking with Marie White and perhaps some others about the nature of tarot. One of the places that where locally where you can find out about tarot is you can go to meetup.com. And you can visit Beth El's Tarot Meetup, which meets usually on Wednesday nights, the third Wednesday of the month. But this is, of course, the one month when that's not going to be the case because of Thanksgiving. So it's going to be on the 28th. And it meets down at, where's that place? On 55 and 54?
It's like right on the 55 and the 54.
Old Charlie's is the... is the restaurant where it meets at 8 o'clock, and it'll be meeting on the 28th of this month of November. You know, so what you've been listening to is Touchstones, Religious Experience. And our guest today has been Marie White. And we have just, as it were, scratched the surface on what the process of tarot symbolism is. And we will have her back in a few months so that we can continue to explore symbolism and the meaning of her particular deck and also the process. By then, she'll have another card done so she can tell us about it. Thank you. This is WCOM in Carrboro, Chapel Hill. CommunityRadio.coop, and you have been listening to Touchstones. I'm your host, Paul Nagy. It was so happy to be here today, and I am looking forward to having you back next week with our guest, Roger Hayes, who will be doing a good version of what the God of love is, and through the salvation of Jesus Christ. Thank you so much.